when we weren't, according to most of us, dozing or, according to Archibald, drifting between distinct but equally real world tracks, we were studying the Dabinernud. A few paragraphs' worth of description from Jules Verne Durand, disseminated over the reticulum, had given the anti-swarm enough information to build a three-dimensional model of the alien ship that, according to the Laterran, was eerily faithful. Blow a balloon out of steel, almost a mile wide, and fill it half full of water. Repeat three more times. Place these four orbs at the corners of a square close to one another, but not quite touching. Repeat with four more orbs. Stack the new set atop the old, but give it a 45-degree twist so that the upper orbs nestle into the clefts between the ones below, like fruits stacked at a greengrocer's. Pile on two more such orb squares, repeating the twist each time. Now you have 16 orbs in a stack a little more than 2 miles high and a little less than 2 miles across. Running up the center of the stack is an empty space, a chimney about half a mile in diameter. Pack that chimney with all of the good stuff, all of the complicated, expensive, exquisitely designed praxis that we have long associated with space travel. Much of it is nothing but structure, steel trusswork to grip those orbs and hold them securely in their places, while the entire thing is spinning around at one revolution per minute to create pseudo-gravity, maneuvering to dodge incoming bogies, managing the resultant slosh, accelerating under atomic power, or all of the above. Once you're satisfied it's never going to fall apart structurally, weave in all of the other stuff. A storage magazine capable of holding tens of thousands of nuclear propulsion charges. Reactors to supply power when the ship is far from any sun. Inconceivably complex plumbing and wiring. Pressurized corridors along which Ernudans, Troans, Laterans, and Phothosians can move from one orb to another. Trunk lines of optical fibers to pipe captured sunlight from the exterior of the icosahedron to the orbs to shine on their rooftop farms. The orbs themselves are comparatively simple. Inside of them, the water's free to find its own level. When the whole construct is spinning, the water flees to the outside and settles into a curve on which gravity is always equal to what it was on the home planet. When the ship is under power, the water settles into the aft part of the sphere and levels out. People live on the surface of the water in houseboats, linked by a web of stretchy lines and held apart by tough air bladders. When the shape of the water changes, there's always a bit of jostling. Like any proper boat, though, these are rigged for that. The cabinets have latches so that they don't fly open. The furniture is attached to the floor so it doesn't slide around. People live as their ancestors did on the home planet and may go for days, weeks, without thinking very much about the fact that they're sealed in a metal balloon being spanked through space by A-bombs, as their families back on Ernud, Tro, Laterra, or Phothos might never think about the fact that they live on wet balls of rock hurtling through a vacuum. This construct, the orb stack, is a nice piece of work, but vulnerable to cosmic rays, wandering rocks, sunlight, and alien weaponry. So, frame walls of gravel around it, and while you're at it, hang the walls on a network of giant shock pistons. The orb stack is suspended in its middle, webbed to it. Anything that relates to the rest of the universe, radar, telescopes, weapon systems, scout vehicles, lives on the outside, attached to the 30 shock pistons, or the 12 vertices where the shocks join together. Three of the vertices, the ones down around the pusher plate, are naked mechanism, but the other nine are all complex space vehicles in themselves. Some are pressurized spheres where members of the command float around weightless. Others have wide tunnels bored through them so that small vehicles and space-suited persons can pass between the interior of the icosahedron and the remainder of whatever cosmos the ship happens to be in. And one is an optical observatory, better than any on Arb, because it enjoys the vacuum of space. All of this had been modeled, in more or less detail, by the minds of the anti-swarm during the days that my cellmates and I had been assembling spacesuits and playing video games in Elkhazg. The model lived in our suits now. We could fly through it using the same controls, the trackball and the stick, that we had earlier used to steer the Monyafiks. From a distance, it seemed impressively complete, with a kind of organic complexity about it. As I flew in closer, though, to explore the core of the orb stack, I found hovering semi-transparent notes that had been posted by diffident avout, writing in perfect orth, informing me with regret that everything beyond this point was pure conjecture. Fra Jad finally got his wish, a sextant. We had been supplied with a device consisting of a wide-angle lens, like Clesthera's eye, that was smart enough to recognize certain constellations, so it could know our attitude with respect to the so-called fixed stars. That, in combination with the positions of the sun, the moon, and Arb, and an accurate internal clock and ephemeris, gave this thing enough information to calculate our orbital elements. Fra Jad seized this tool as soon as its presence was made known and devoted hours to mastering its functions.